be. They used to do that.
Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Monday, March 19th, 2012. We have quite a few items on the agenda that we're going to be working through here for the members on the committee. First and foremost, the first item on the agenda, Senate File 1046, Senator Senjum, Racino, and Minnesota Future Fund. Members, as you might remember, we heard public testimony on this bill last session, laid it on the table. Because of this, we are only taking 20 minutes of testimony for those in support, the same for those in opposition. After that, we will discuss the bill as a committee and take a vote on the bill no later than 2:15 this afternoon. I'm absolutely going to adhere to this and make that 2:15 deadline the deadline for this bill. So please keep that in mind as we discuss the bill. Senator Senjum, I believe you have, we're going to start, we're going to hold, I know you have an amendment, but we do need a quorum here before we can move.
Do we have one?
Oh, we do have a quorum. With that, Senator Senjum, would you like to offer your...
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't. I'm going to need some help on this. I'm not a member of the committee, so... But there is a...
Senator Artman will move the, I believe it's the A...
A-12.
A-12 amendment.
0765.
To the amendment, Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment... takes this bill from a bill where the proceeds of Racino would go to paying off the school shift as opposed to what was previously the case, and that was the creation development of a economic development fund in for Minnesota to grow Minnesota businesses. It was referred to as a Minnesota Future Fund. In addition to that, it clarifies some clarifying language with respect to how purse money might be paid off from the standpoint of an agreement between Canterbury Downs and Running Aces.
All right. Further discussion on the A-12 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Amendment does not prevail.
Division.
Division has been... requested.
Mr. Chair, may I ask, is this a first amendment, an author's amendment?
Yes, it is.
And it's as a courtesy, I would hope members would support it.
That's correct. Provision has been asked for. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your right hand.
Author's amendment, okay.
Author's amendment.
Thank you.
All those opposed, right hand. Amendment does prevail.
Okay.
To the bill, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be too used to the floor. And members, this is a Racino bill. You've heard it before, at least in the term and context of what it does. This now will direct, at least presented, $120 to $30 million into the paying off of the school shift. Just to go through it rather quickly, Racino, I'm not sure I need to define it, but it is about placing video gaming machines at Canterbury Park and Running Aces. Approximately 2,000 are noted in the bill. The whole essence of this bill, and the reason I sit here today, is the whole subject of the horse industry. If we do not do something dramatically in the way of a Racino, and that seems to be the way that it has been done, certainly in other states, we're going to lose our horse industry in Minnesota. So we have a chance here to either go the way of doing nothing in terms of this bill and very likely in a matter of 2 or 3 years losing this industry, or enacting Racino and saving it, in fact building it. And in fact, if you were to do a little work in terms of the state of Pennsylvania, you'll find out that they have got a $4 billion horse industry out there that's doing a lot in terms of job creation and just, frankly, economic vitality for their state. So it's about horses. It's about growing that horse industry. It's about making that industry grow and flourish in Minnesota. There's obviously different components to this. 14 states have racinos, Mr. Chair, and Indiana, and Pennsylvania are perhaps the most notable, where they've brought a huge amount of money to the horse industry. The expansion, if you will, and it's not really an expansion, but the expansion of gaming machines into Canterbury Park and Running Aces, it really does not constitute an additional expansion in terms of location, because they already do card clubs here at both locations. So the gaming is already occurring, of course, with horse racing and the betting associated with that, and certainly the card clubs. Gaming already exists. This adds the component video display terminals at those sites, and an additional gaming were to certainly occur with those. The Minnesota Lottery will own and operate the video display lottery machines. The racetracks will provide the location, the employees to run the operation. Again, about 2,000 gaming machines at each site, raising is estimated in the neighborhood of $120 to $130 million a year. And again, that would go a long way towards the school shift. The Minnesota Racing Commission will oversee the equine investments associated with all of this. The state legislature will, as anything, with respect to anything that's statutorily driven, will have an opportunity to guide the development of this as it's implemented going forward in whatever way it needs to, whether it's ratios or anything like that. The legislature will always maintain control. There has always been legal issues about, at least that are presented when we talk about this. The Racino folks have engaged former Chief Justice Magnuson on these questions, and he's confident that legal issues with respect to going forward with this can be resolved rather quickly and are not going to impede in any way for a substantial period of time the implementation of this. 70% of Minnesotans, in fact, probably more than 70% of Minnesotans, favor racinos and have in every poll that I've seen going an awfully long way back. That is in and of itself not enough reason to do it. I would say the reason you ought to think about this, again, it's jobs, it's the horse industry, it's what it can do to our state from the standpoint of a flourishing economy. So I'm going to stop there and leave time for questions. I've got Mr. Jeff Hilger by my side, and he's going to talk to it this issue a little bit more from the standpoint of the horse industry. And I've also got Mr. Darris here from the Running Aces racetrack. I think he has a couple of comments.
First and foremost, committee members, before I start the clock on testimony, does anyone have any specific questions for Senator Senjum before I start this clock on testimony? Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what order you want to go in. I had a couple questions for Senator Senjum relative to the monies involved, suggested. Do you want that question now, or do you
want
me to wait?
I don't want to try to start and stop the clock is what I'm hoping to avoid. So if you have a couple of that you want to shoot out at the senator, please do so.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I've heard a lot of, over the years, a variety of figures suggested for the Racino. And, of course, at one time that was the panacea for a stadium. So I guess we've moved beyond that. But now it's the school shift. Now, the school shift, I think, is what? $2.1 billion, I believe. Yes. Is that the figure?
Senator Cohen, pardon me, Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, that's my understanding. It's obviously the legislature is willing away with it with respect to, you know, the last forecast, but that's about where that is, yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, Senjum, how much money per year will go to payment of the school shift?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, there have been two more notable fiscal notes prepared on this. One has it at $87 million. One has it at $120 million. It's in that range. So to answer your question, somewhere between $87 and $120. These are again off fiscal notes, differently prepared for different bills, but that's the neighborhood.
Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, so that's The $87 million is the money that would go on an annual basis to the school shift.
Senator Senjan.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, that's correct.
So it's, Senator Cohen.
So it's still going to take a quarter of a century for us to pay back the school shift.
Mr. Senator Chair, Senator, Senator Cohen, that is probably true unless, obviously, the Minnesota economy picks up and we all are working hard to make sure that occurs.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjan, and lastly, I guess that's a concern I have is that you've talked about the horse racing industry, and obviously what brings this bill in front of us is concerns that folks in that industry have as to the financial viability of the racetrack and how you supplement the income at the racetrack. And we've had, as you mentioned, the card club and so on. But if this is kind of the lost leader for payback of the school shift, I would – you know, what happens, hypothetically, if the horse racing industry, for whatever reason, doesn't succeed with this effort, and I'm not the expert on horse racing, and now we find we've tied ourselves to payment of the school shift through this, then where do we go? Since we're not going to raise taxes to pay back the school shift, you know, aren't we better off just maintaining present statute and allow payment of the school shift with surplus monies as they come in?
Senator
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, this bill does not in any way change the statutory obligations towards additional money available going towards paying off the school shift. This would augment the existing statutory provision.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just
Senator
finally,
Cohen.
This would seem to be a little bit better than, I guess, the other legislation I've heard about. I don't know that it's been introduced in the Senate, but has had more attention in the House, and that is taking the surplus monies and paying off the school shift, when statutorily we should try to be putting Minnesota in better fiscal shape if this is extra money. But having said that, it will be the slow way to do it. So I just want to get some sense of the dollars and where those were.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Senjan, if what would happen to any excess monies that come in once presumably the school shift is paid off? Does it then become general fund money, or what happens?
Senator Senjan.
Mr. Chair and Senator Thompson, Senator Cohen has referred to the length of time that would take, obviously many years. I don't have it in the bill. My guess would be that it would go to pay off debt. It would do whatever any future legislature, perhaps 15 to 20 years from now, might conclude it should do. So that would be left up to a future legislature to decide.
All right. Thank you, committee. We're going to move on to start the clock on testimony at 20 after 1. Please state your name, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Hilger. I'm the president of the Equine Development Coalition of Minnesota. I come today to talk to you about the equine industry as it stands today in Minnesota. The reason we are supporting a racino at Canterbury Park and at Running Aces is to raise the purses to enhance the horse industry in Minnesota. Also, to guarantee that all Minnesota breeds are competitively and nationally competitive. And I'm going to get into why in a few minutes. And also, a large part of it, support the non-racing breeds in the state of Minnesota. You know, the projector didn't work, right?
Right.
Can we make sure they get this?
You have a handout for the
committee?
Yeah,
we have a handout. We have a
our page.
The projector wasn't working, so this will have to work. I've covered page number 1, and we'll just go right on to page number 2. If you look at page number 2, and I'll wait till you all get it, because this is the real crux of the whole thing. On page 2, it gives you a comparison the standardbred, quarter horse, and thoroughbred industry racetracks in our vicinity, who we compete with, and where we stand purse-wise. And as you can see, in the standardbred, Running Aces is roughly $4,000 in purse average. Indiana down to $17,000. If you look at the quarter horse, Canterbury Park is $8,000. Remington Park is $23,000. If you look at the thoroughbred, Canterbury Park is $13,000 and Hoosier Park is $25,000. What this means is that when horses come from the south in the summer to come to Minnesota to race, they don't get here. They stop at Hoosier Park. They stop in Iowa. They stop in Oklahoma. They're not coming here anymore. And if they don't come here, we don't have enough horses to fill a meet. You go on to page 3. This is the piece, this is the part of the industry that's very dear to my heart. I own a thoroughbred breeding farm in Stillwater. I've been doing it for 25 years, and I have watched exactly what this chart shows you. In 1982, I believe it was, we passed pari-mutuel gambling in Minnesota. And immediately, the agricultural business went into action. And we went from roughly 150 mares in the state to 1,200 in 3 years. That's a big jump, 1,200. At that time, we had roughly 800 and some foals. We had plenty of horses coming into the pipeline to support a track. About 19, you have to pardon me, I just had eye surgery, so I'm having trouble reading things here. In 1990, you can see 89, 88, 89. You're going to see the blue is the foal count. The black is the purse. As purses went up, foals went up. It's a three-year wait. Remember one thing. In this business, when you breed a horse, it's 3 years before you get anything to get a return on your investment. So everybody back in those late 80s were taking the gamble that this was going to be very, very successful, and we were willing to go into it because the purses were going to be there. Millions, and I mean millions of dollars were put into this. First, the Minnesota Lottery came along, took a portion of the gambling dollars away. Indian Gaming came along, took a big portion of the dollars away. And if you watch the full count, you watch the purses go down on this chart, you watch them go together. As purses go down, full counts go down. Then you got a flat area in the middle. We were closed for a year there. Canterbury Park reopened. If you look out here in 1985, I believe it was, you'll see it start to climb up. It's climbing up and rounding out. That's because we got a card club. And money came from the card club. The legislature was good enough to help us. We were in trouble. To get enough foal back in to keep our track viable. 4 years ago, 13 states in this country that had the same problem as us, no different than us, they had alternate gambling come in and it was hurting them. Their states recognized the problem, voted into law Racino, raised the purses up at the track, got the handle or the betting back up and got the money back into the track and the full count back up. Now, what does that mean? Indiana is a state that's very similar to Minnesota, population-wise, demographic. They were one of those states. They had an $875,000 horse industry. They had roughly 10,000 jobs. They put a Racino and it jumped to $2.4 billion and added over 20,000 jobs. Now, if they can do that, what we've done in Minnesota, if you look at page 4, we did the University of Minnesota did a research project, and they determined there was roughly $1 billion industry in Minnesota. If we can raise our industry 2 to 3 times, like every other state that put a Racino in, we'd be roughly $2.5 billion from a $1 billion industry. That generates roughly 25,000 jobs throughout the whole state. Not just, this doesn't even count the track. This in the equine industry. At one of the committee meetings not too long ago, I was asked when I said the word fact, How do you know it's a fact? And I will tell you, this happened in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 states that all acted the same. Every single one of them doubled or tripled their horse industry. There's no reason why Minnesota can't do it. This is a tremendous horse state. We have 150,000 horses in this state. We have over 40,000 horse owners. If you look at how we decided we were going to make this a first-class state, we already have a first-class track out of Canterbury Park and at Running Aces. These are world-class facilities. We already have the basis, because back in 1982, 83, 84, 85, they built a world-class track because it was going to be world-class. We already have it. We went back and we took the top 25 tracks in the country. We took their average race per day, the average of that, and we took the monies that come from Canterbury Park and Running Aces. And I say that very loosely. That doesn't come from Canterbury Park, and it doesn't come from Running Aces. It comes from the lottery terminals at Canterbury Park and Running Aces. At no time does Canterbury Park or Running Aces own those machines or have that money. That money is put into the equine industry improvement program. Purses then go, it's split down 75% to purses, 20% to breeders' fund, 5% to non-racing. So you get an understanding what that means. The 75% that goes to purses puts Running Aces standardbreds in the top 10 tracks in the country. It puts Canterbury Park's quarter horses in the top 10 tracks in the country. And it puts the thoroughbreds in the top 15 in the country. We are now back to being a world-class organization. If you look down the next one where you see the 20%, you see the Breeders' Fund. The Breeders' Fund is an incentive for people like me to go out and spend a lot of money to build a thoroughbred farm, to buy mares, have babies, and spend roughly several hundred thousand dollars a year feeding them, taking care of them, and having veterinarians. I probably employ, honestly, at my farm somewhere around 15 people by myself. I'm just one farm. This is a huge, huge part of this industry. A horse that is born at my farm on day one, from the time it gets from that day to the time it races, I have roughly $30,000 in that horse. If we go back to the days when we had 1,000 foal, take that times $30,000, that's $30 million times three, it's $100 million before we race a horse, just in thoroughbred babies. That's not including all the rest of them. That's not including the 150,000 horses in this state. Now we get down to non-racing. Non-racing is 4-H, trail riders, hunter jumpers, people that enjoy the industry. There is $1.5 million in this bill to set up in a grant program for an industry that needs help. Some of you may have been to the Harvest Show, Fall Harvest Show, which is a big show for kids. They get their points all years long in the hunter jumper shows, and at the end of the year, they all get to go to the Hippodrome, the state fair. They get to be big shots. They announced at that show this year, and there was 3,000 people there. They announced at that show we may not be able to have it next year because we don't have enough money. That's absurd. There's a grant program that will be $1.5 million. They can go in and get grants to keep these shows going, get 4-H back to where it was. I happen to live in Stillwater. I happen to live in Washington County. 3 years ago, my farrier told me Washington County ran out of money and they can no longer fund the 4-H and our kids can't go to the state 4-H show. Absurd. We put a bunch of people together. We got them enough money. They went. These kind of things cannot continue to happen on something as good as horses. You take a young child, you put them with a horse, they learn responsibility. They learn things more than pushing buttons on a little machine playing games. There's more to this. We have out near me, I have the Votage farm. They literally have the handicapped disability kids riding on the horses. They do it for nothing. They do it out of the kindness of their heart. Every day they're out there, Ryan. University of Minnesota Equine Center. Every night, in come the kids with disabilities. There's a waiting list, huge waiting list, for horses and people to do this. There's no money.
Mr. Hildre, I just want to remind you, you've taken 10 minutes of the 20 minutes already.
I'm just about done, sir.
All right.
These are all the good things I can tell you about the horse racing industry, what it can be done in the horse industry. Now I'm going to tell you, if you all got this piece of paper, this is a letter from your Minnesota Racing Commission, our Minnesota Racing Commission. It tells the story just like it is. If we don't do something quick, it's over. It is over. The next piece of paper you'll see is the foal count, again, out of their annual report. You can see the foal count consistently going down from 844 now down to 131. That's last year. This year it will be much less. I usually had 14 babies a year. I'm having one. And I'm not the only guy that did this. There is no doubt in my mind, I'm not saying Canterbury Park or Running Aces will close down for financial reasons. I'm going to tell you they're not going to have enough horses to fill races and they won't be able to race. Because when you take 50 babies this year, 50 next year, and 50 the next year, that's 150 horses at that track. It takes 1,200 to run a meet. We can't get the other 1,100 horses because nobody will come here because the purses are too low. So, yes, we are desperate. This is no longer playing around. I've been doing this for 14 years. I've come to you and begged. I'm only telling you the truth. It will be over very shortly. Thank you.
Thank you. Others at the table want to testify? All right. Did you want to say something, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is John Darris, and I'm from the Board of Directors of Running Aces, and we are here in unison with Jeff and Randy and our colleagues from Canterbury Downs, and especially supporting Senator Senjim's bill. Sometimes I think this gets a little too complicated, and what it really is just putting 2,000 electronic gaming devices in each one of these two places, which are already regulated by the state of Minnesota, which already have a special relationship with the state of Minnesota. And I would agree with everything Senator Senjim said in the way of this is not really an expansion of gaming at all. I mean, that genie's out of the bottle. And this would employ thousands of people. It would. It's a voluntary user fee. You don't have to pay it if you don't want it. You just don't go there. But anyway, we just came here today, Mr. Chairman, to support our colleagues.
Thank you very much.
Senator Cohen.
Can we have questions for the witnesses?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hildre, just a quick question if I can. I appreciate your comments about the horse racing industry. And I hadn't thought about kind of the symmetry that as we expanded gambling, that resulted in a diminishment of the industry. But is the reverse there? I mean, I have not been close to stadium issues, to say the least, around this place. But we have a bill of Senator Rosen's that I don't know what present shape it's in, but depends on charitable gambling for the revenues. So if we increase the gambling opportunities at the racetrack, does that have a consequence of reversing what you suggested happened X number of years ago? So you would have less money available for charitable gambling. And then if we were to pass the Senator Rosen stadium bill as it now is, find ourselves in trouble in terms of a stadium and having to put general fund dollars to make up the difference. Does that happen? The other question, rather than Mr. Chairman going back and forth, the other part of that is where we have Indian casinos, is there any loss of employment at those casinos as a consequence? And so then we have that problem as well. So do we reverse that in terms of what you suggested a few minutes ago?
The last question I'd like to answer first. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Senator. The last question I'd like to address first. Every number that I've seen of losses at the Indian gaming facilities are actually quite small compared to a 40,000 people losing jobs or not getting jobs and putting this bill through. We're talking either a loss of 15,000 jobs or a gain of 25,000 jobs. If we don't do something, that's 40,000 people we can go out and face and say, sorry, you don't have a job. That's my answer to that. I can't be any more blunt than that. The other question you've asked, I really don't think casino gambling or horse racing gambling has any effect whatsoever on charitable gambling. I think I've been around a long time, and I've, in my younger years, played a lot of pull tabs in bars. It is a social sport. I go in, I order a beer with my friend and say, let's buy $10 worth of pull tabs. We talk and have a drink and play the pull tabs. I do not believe that the charitable gaming or the pull tab industry will ever be hurt by the horse industry or by the gaming industry. I don't believe that.
And Mr. Chairman, is
all right. Just Senator Cohen.
Do we have any quantification for that? I mean, that's kind of anecdotal on your part.
I can't. Yeah, I can't tell you that because I really – I have yet to ever find anything written up on it because it's never really come to that question before of charitable gaming is affected by casino gambling. I don't know. I really can't
answer. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hilger, the only reason I raise that is was your testimony relative to what had happened X number of years ago when the lottery and casino gambling came into being and the impact that had on the horse industry. That's why I ask if there's
a reverse. Excuse me.
Hilger.
Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, Senator, I agree with you what I said, but what I meant to say and what I meant is alternate gaming came along, lottery, casino. Which one killed us the most? There's no doubt anybody in this room's which one it is. I mean, I know what it is. You know what it is. Indian gaming killed us, all right? I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying Indian gaming's bad. I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to do what they do. But I honestly believe when an industry has put millions and millions and millions of dollars in to support 66% of the people in this state's vote, and then turn around and knock their feet right out from underneath them without any forethought, yes, I think that's wrong.
All right, we're going to move on here. Thank you, gentlemen. We have approximately 8 minutes or so left to get in four testifiers, as I see it here. First one is John Fito from the Iron Range Racing Complex. We'd like to remind you to keep your testimony tight. Please state your name, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Fito. I represent the Iron Range Racing Complex and have for about almost 20 years now. The effort that we're putting forth is coincidental to the hopeful success of the Racino bill. And in the context of our testimony here last year, Mayor Rick Cannata, the mayor of Hibbing, had joined me. The facility that we're working on in northeastern Minnesota has been an effort since 1993. It combines a number of different racing venues for a year-round program, which includes car racing, snowmobile racing, quarter horse racing. We've been working with Canterbury Downs and a number of the folks in the equine industry since the mid-1990s. Trying to put this particular venture together. And in the bottom line is about $40 million worth of new investment that would lie on a 620-acre site within the city of Hibbing, located on Highway 169 between Hibbing and Chisholm. It would bring together a number of the efforts that have been going on for a number of years to attract visitors to northeastern Minnesota. The revenues generated for this particular project would be based on a $40 million investment, about 425 to 460 permanent jobs. About 375 construction jobs would occur during a three-year period. Horses would be kept at the facilities because of the size of the site, 620-plus acres. We feel this facility fits a very large effort that we've been working on for a number of years. Canterbury Downs has been a very strong advocate of our efforts in the past. They have, in fact, assisted us in putting together a study by the Innovation Group in 2006 that noted that this particular project would not be successful but for the inclusion of Racino. We're hopeful that this particular effort and legislation this year will be passed. It will generate about $17 million worth of new revenues to the state of Minnesota alone, about $250,000 for the city of Hibbing, about $250,000 worth of additional revenues to St. Louis County. And as we all know, those dollars are sadly needed in northeastern Minnesota. The effort here at the Iron Range Racing Complex occurs in about a 75-mile area that there is no coincidental gaming provided. We would appreciate your efforts, and we would answer any questions that you might have. Located to the right is an artist rendering of the particular facility. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Right, thank you. Our next testifier is Mr. Brad Tabke, Mayor of Shakopee here. I don't see him. So, Mr. O'Connor? Mr. O'Connor here? Yes. Okay. And then is Richard...
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Why don't you come up and sit at the table, too, sir, so we can move right from Mr. O'Connor to you. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Greg O'Connor with the Republican Liberty Caucus. Here today to speak on behalf of free enterprise and free markets. Up front, let me say that I am speaking only for myself today because my just recently over the weekend, I submitted the results of an investigative report that I did on behalf of the board of the Republican Liberty Caucus regarding the commercial gaming industry here in Minnesota. That investigative report did include an organization known as the CAGE Organization and the lobbyists behind the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. What I found was a well-established industry that a little over 20 years ago was only a few million dollars and today is $15 to $20 billion. Missing from this massive growth was any corresponding tax revenue benefit for the beleaguered taxpayers of Minnesota. So I'm here today to speak in favor of the Racino bill, which would do several things. One, because two private sector companies are involved, tax revenue would begin to flow. Second, this would be a reaffirmation of our support for free enterprise and free markets. And third, this would begin to expose the political corruption that I found in the investigative report that I did. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
You know, people can have...
Could you move?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
People can have positions for and against legislation here, but to start talking about political corruption, just throw that out. I guess I'd be curious to see the investigative report, the documentation, the source material, how many witnesses were subpoenaed and testified under oath if we're talking about some investigation of political corruption. There are many reasons to support this bill. There are many reasons to oppose this bill, but let's stay away from political corruption.
Thank you, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'd be happy to submit to you a copy of my research.
Great.
I'll see that it's delivered to your office.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Connor, if you are truly the concern is open free markets and competition, then we should not limit the number of casinos nor gambling facilities. Would that be correct?
That would be correct.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Please state your name and proceed.
Richard Neistat. I have a very small interest in a racehorse this year and would like to expand it, and I support the horse racing industry in Minnesota. Very, very brief remarks. On KSTP last night, there was an assertion by an opponent of the Racinos that why should we bail them out, that this is a dying sport for young people. It's an old person's game. Well, if you go to Canterbury Park on a Thursday night, it is populated by 20-somethings. Canterbury Park is the only racing venue in the entire United States that is showing year-over-year on-track attendance on Thursday nights. It outdraws Belmont. It outdraws Santa Anita. in terms of revenue in Oklahoma, when they went from no Racino to a Racino, the money was used for education. Oklahoma went from ranked 47th in the country in per capita spending to number 21. And finally, Aqueduct paid a license prior to the Racinos, or as a condition for the Racinos. The Minnesota legislature could add that and get some upfront revenue, perhaps, from the two or three tracks involved. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to move on now. Thank you for your testimony. We're going to move on to those that have signed up. And it looks like there's seven people in the opposition here. Please limit your testimony approximately 3 minutes each, and we should get it done. The first one will be John McCarthy. Ms. Meeks, you can also join at the table. Please state your name. And you may proceed.
Senator, my name is John McCarthy. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, and I'm here today to oppose the Racino legislation proposed. In a quick response, in response to Mayor Fito, what we've said right from the get-go is that once the state of Minnesota gets in this, it'll never stop. It'll go on and on forever. And Mayor Fito is the first of one mayor. There'll be many more that'll come before you. I'm here to oppose the proposal to authorize the Racinos. As has been our position for more than a decade, our association opposes the further expansion of gambling for any purpose, and we oppose this proposal. Huge revenue windfalls based on the most recent published consolidated fiscal note have been promised. After analysis of that document, we have grave concerns of its validity. This is not the first fiscal note that we have seen on the Racino. February of 2010, House Research estimated Racino revenue between $44 and $98 million. May 3rd of 2011, official fiscal note projects Racino at $98 million. October 17th, 2011, Racino revenues projected at $140 million. Which of these estimates are correct, or are they all wrong? I've worked in the gaming business for over 20 years, and I'm not an accountant, but I have considerable background in planning and managing casino operations. The fiscal note is inaccurate, incomplete assessment of economic reality of the proposed Racino legislation. All policymakers should be deeply concerned with errors and omissions in this fiscal note. Revenues are overstated by at least 20%. Minnesota gaming market is overestimated. Slot performance is overestimated. Expenses are underrated by at least 35%. Senators, our greatest concern to our association is the loss of jobs in rural areas in the state. This fiscal note fails to address the impact on state revenue of major layoffs at tribal casinos affected by Racino approval. Tribal gaming is the sixth largest employer in the state of Minnesota. State payroll tax revenues will drop by as much as 25%, and at least 5,000 tribal jobs will be lost. That's 25% of the direct jobs supported by tribal gaming and governments. These jobs have health care benefits. Beyond devastation to and job losses, we are concerned that this proposal ignores the cost to lease or purchase 4,000 slot machines. Minimum cost to purchase them would be $100 million. Without the computer system, cost to lease those same machines would be $37 million. Public safety can't possibly do their job for the projections in the fiscal note. This proposal, with only two additional staff, tribal casino costs run $2.5 million and 30 FTEs for the same function. The Racing Commission can't do their job with no additional FTEs. Tribal casino costs run $6.6 million and 200 FTEs for the same function. So you get the gist of where I'm going. A question came up earlier about the cost of to charitable gambling. In the fiscal note, there is no remedy in this proposal for the lawful gambling board's projection of a 25% drop in tax revenue from charitable gambling. This proposal fails to account for any associated possible constitutional challenges of the Racino legislation. I know the horse industry is very well represented here today, and while we understand their position, we cannot agree with it. Less than 2% of the 90,000 horses in the state of Minnesota ever put their hooves on a racetrack. Subsidizing this industry would be temporary, as what we've been seeing in some of the same areas that Mr. Hilger testified to is these same tracks that once they were given the opportunity to have slot machines have now petitioned to do away with live racing. That's happened in the dog track industry, and it's happening in the racetrack industry. The most significant change in Minnesota gambling policy in a generation needs to be based on thorough and detailed due diligence, not pie-in-the-sky promises. In closing, please understand our genuine concern for our employees. These are hardworking Minnesotans who will lose their jobs if racinos are allowed. Most of these hardworking men and women live in rural Minnesota, and the jobs that they have are good jobs with benefits, which are hard to find in those areas. These are the kind of jobs, in particular, in outstate Minnesota that don't get replaced once they're gone. The economies of many of the counties, townships, and small cities will be harmed if we lose their opportunity to gain income from these jobs. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Meeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm a board member volunteer of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. I'm here today to urge you not to expand gambling in Minnesota because it won't stop at two racinos. Gambling is a lousy and unreliable source of income, and it won't end when we allow slot machines, 4,000 slot machines at the two existing racetracks. We learn a lot of lessons looking at other states, and I want to share with you just very briefly today some of those lessons. We cited Indiana today, for example, as an example of a successful racino, one of which is already bankrupt. New York State just 4 days ago took their, or excuse me, 10 years ago authorized racinos, 4 days ago decided to have full state-run slot machines and casinos. Local racinos aren't destinations for gamblers. They're convenience for existing gamblers who already exist, creating only one thing, more problems in the local community. The false promises that we've heard today are just extraordinary. We can again look at other states and see what's happened. Oklahoma in 2002, their former governor decided to use gambling to help the state with their education funds. What happened there was he promised $300 million in additional funds for state education. He revised those numbers several years later after the gambling started in Oklahoma to $150 million, the actual $70 million. Pennsylvania, same lesson learned the hard way. Former Governor N. Rendell promised $1 billion in property tax relief. Today, they're still $200 million short. What's their solution? Four more casinos. There's 16 states, counting Massachusetts and 17 now with New York 4 days ago, that have slot machines, state-run, which is what this would be. And in those, two-thirds of all states have failed to achieve the promises that they made to their voters when they decided to get in the gambling business. Let's face it, gambling is a destination. The largest slot machine palace in the entire United States, actually in the entire Western Hemisphere, was written about yesterday in the Sunday New York Times. That is, of course, the Foxwoods Casino that we used to hear about quite a bit. What we haven't heard is an update on how Foxwoods is doing. And I quote the New York Times, it is fighting for its life. With 6,300 slot machines, they're now $2.3 billion in debt. The exact words of their CEO is it's financial havoc. We see the same with the horse racing industry. Why is this? Because almost every state has turned to more and more gambling to solve their financial problems. The best line in the New York Times yesterday, if you're looking for casinos to solve your revenue problems, you're never going to be happy. And that was a quote from the Foxwoods Casino. And the problem is, frankly, gambling doesn't create any new product. It creates more gamblers. More gamblers create more problems. We have some serious problems facing our state, and certainly education is one of the most important things that we do. But education is too important to be funded in an ad hoc way and, frankly, to be funded with empty promises. Last year I testified against this bill. Then it was to help the declining horse racing industry. Earlier it was for the Viking Stadium. Now it's for the rural economy and to pay back some of the education shifts. This is just a long line in the false promises we've seen with gambling, and I hope that, and I urge you today, to not expand gambling in Minnesota and to follow down the path these other states have done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We have next Mr. Pritchard and Mr. Weinberger. Could you both come up to the table, please? We have 11 minutes and counting here, so Mr. Pritchard.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Pritchard, and I'm here to testify against the bill. I'm opposed to the expansion of gambling for a number of reasons. I think many people think this is an innocuous, relatively painless way to raise taxes, putting casinos and video slots at horse tracks. But I believe it's a bad idea for a number of reasons. First, this bill means the state will be profiting off the expansion of predatory gambling at the expense of the people of Minnesota. Predatory gambling or video slots are the most addictive form of gambling. It's known as the crack cocaine of gambling. It's estimated that 1% of slot gamblers account for 50% of slot proceeds. This casino bill takes advantage of these people who can least afford to gamble, people with gambling problems. This is a poor way to raise tax revenues. Second, it means the state will be preying on the very people it's supposed to be protecting, the people of Minnesota. The state will be promoting and encouraging thousands of Minnesotans to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on predatory gambling so it can raise more taxes. Third, it's a further expansion of gambling will further promote the get-rich-quick mentality, the last thing we need to do in a time of high unemployment and tough economic times. Fourth, casino gambling will cannibalize existing tax revenues by drawing existing money away from main streets and productive businesses and areas of the economy and directing it to gambling. Fifth, this will increase the pressure to expand gambling even further. Gambling revenues are extremely unreliable, as were recently stated, sources of funding for the state. Invariably, gambling revenues will drop off. This will give incentive to increase gambling even more. And finally, it'll make it more difficult to roll back predatory gambling in the future. Use of casinos for state funding of education will increase government dependence on gambling and thus make it more difficult to roll back gambling in the future. I believe if you need to raise taxes to fund education, I encourage you to look for other sources than disproportionately targeting problem gamblers who are the chief source of revenue for slot machines in the casinos. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Weinberg.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Don Weinberger. I'm 55 years old, and I've been married for 33 years to my wife, Diane. We have 3 grown children and 8 grandchildren. I am here to voice my concerns in opposition to Senate File 1046, which would place casinos at the horse tracks. I want to voice my concerns because of my personal experience with gambling addiction and to consider the social costs that towns, cities, and counties may incur from the result of blanking the state with electronic video gambling. Around 1980, I started playing parlay cards for football games at local bars. A couple years later, I began banning individual games through friends with a bookmaker. Shortly thereafter, I began to deal directly with a bookmaker. Soon, I became hooked and was betting on sports virtually every day. It wasn't long after that the casinos started being built in the state of Minnesota. I began making frequent trips to the blackjack tables at various casinos. Continually borrowed money from family and friends, took out loans longer periods of time that I never paid off, cash advances on Visa cards. I had 3 checking accounts. I was kiting checks between account every day. Gambling became a focal point of each day. I had trouble sleeping at night because of the debt and would wake up each morning scheming to get through the next day. I started calling in sick to work, lying to family and friends so I could spend more time at the casinos. There were even times I did not come home at night at all. Lying became a normal way of life for me. I was not the type of husband, father, co-worker, or friend I should have been. Not as a direct result, but indirectly, I lost my full-time job. We ended up in bankruptcy, lost virtually everything, including a car, a motorhome, and our home of 18 years to foreclosure. Our marriage nearly ended in divorce. Through it all, I consider myself a lucky man. I never ended up in jail or committed suicide. I was able to learn to control my addiction with meetings alone. I know countless others who are not as fortunate. The number of people seeking help from compulsive gambling is unquestionably on the rise. I'm very grateful that this is my only addiction. I would like to note that of all the people I have met in Gamblers Anonymous who are dually or triply addicted, meaning to alcohol and or drugs, they all say that quitting the gambling is the hardest. Please remember these people when you think of expanding gambling through establishing new casinos. I urge you to reconsider expanding gambling to raise taxes for economic development or other purposes. Please look for revenue source which won't harm thousands of Minnesotans. I believe the social costs individuals, families, and taxpayers and local governments will bear far outweigh any benefits. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mel Towell and Mr. Ken Rockler, please come forward. Please state your name and you may proceed. We have about 8 minutes left.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mel Toll. I'm the general manager at Grand Casino Hinckley. That's about halfway between the Twin Cities and the Twin Ports. It's owned and operated by the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. The Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe is the 40th largest employer in Minnesota, employing more than 4,100 people. The band employs about 1,100. The remaining 3,000 are employed at Grand Casinos Mille Lacs and Hinckley. The majority of our associates have full health care, 401k, and time-off benefits. We have more than 3,400 people who are covered by Grand Casino Mille Lacs and Hinckley's health care plans, coverage that is hard to find in our area of the state. Since the casinos opened, more jobs have been increased. We've increased jobs by 35% in Mille Lacs County and 72% in Pine County. These are steady, reliable jobs and trusted, successful businesses. They were created without any assistance, any financial assistance from the state or federal government. Expanding gambling would endanger jobs in rural Minnesota that people like me depend on. I have worked at Grand Casino for over 10 years. My story is just like many of my friends and neighbors. There's over 3,000 employees, many communities, business owners, and residents of the region who have come to rely on the benefits that Grand Casino has brought from an economic perspective. It has been so rewarding to see so many of my friends and neighbors from my hometown be allowed to provide for themselves and their families while remaining living and working in rural Minnesota. It's difficult for me to understand why a proposal would be considered that would put these quality jobs in jeopardy. Some may try and convince you that given the location of our facility is well north of the Twin Cities Metro, that an expansion of gaming in the Twin Cities Metro would not have an impact on us. This is simply not the case. The metro area is the key market from which we draw our customers. As a result, the heart of the gaming market for Grand Casinos and the heart of the gaming market for the proposed sites that are being considered are one and the same. Market research has shown that Minnesota is a mature gaming market. Rather than attract new gamers, expanding gaming will take existing customers from tribal casinos. Those revenues and those jobs will be lost and basically transferred to the metro area. The Mille Lacs Band alone estimates a loss of 1,600 direct jobs if gaming is expanded in the Twin Cities. This is 1,600 of the 4,100 direct employees that I mentioned earlier. Expanding gaming in the metro area will hurt entire regions of Minnesota. The consequences are far-reaching and represent a major economic hit to rural Minnesota. In much of the discussion that has been heard, there's a lot of benefits that are always spoken of in regards to expansion of gaming. I hope that you will take into consideration the negative consequences of this expansion. The question that I often ask is, how does the transfer of jobs from the state's rural communities to the metro area constitute any net gain for the state of Minnesota? Please remember that when Indian gaming got started in Minnesota, it was to create jobs and boost the economy of greater Minnesota. Gaming expansion would take us in the complete opposite direction and reverse the progress that has been made. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Please state your name and proceed. We're down to about 5 minutes here.
Chairman Perry, members of the committee, my name is Ken Rockler. I'm here representing the Tavern League of Minnesota and the Bowling Proprietors Association. Officially, I'd like to think that unofficially I'm representing 1,100 charities and 3,100 independent businesses and the taxpayers of Minnesota. I'm not happy with the current gambling status, so I don't want to act like I think that there isn't a monopoly right now, but I guess the old saying is, why throw the baby out with the bathwater? And there's been a lot of testimony here about how it would not harm other businesses or charitable gambling. There's actually some statistics on this. I wasn't prepared for this testimony right now, but the Oregon Gambling Board would be a good source for anyone to talk to. That's what our bill has always been based on. And yes, there they had the gambling in the bars and the bowling centers and the VFWs and the American Legions prior to 9 tribal casinos being established. I think anybody here knows that these things all compete with each other to a certain extent. My problem with the bill is basically about 5 different things. First of all, revenue to the state. The fiscal note on Senate File 116, which I would hope everyone would consider as opposed to this, has been cut down now to $400 million per biennium. I would argue with anybody that figure is low, and all you'd have to do is look at the Oregon report, and I could provide that for anyone after this. charities. There are 1,100 charities right now that have all gone down in revenue that are located in 3,100 businesses. I feel for the horse industry, but I hope you'll feel for those 1,100 charities also. Fairness. This is a special legislation for two groups versus 3,100 independent businesses, legions, and VFWs, and again, 1,100 charities. Jobs. There's a lot of numbers being thrown around here. I was trying to follow them. I was having a hard time figuring out how we currently have 100 horses that race and that there's 1,100 that come up from out of state, yet somehow we're going to establish 25,000 jobs. I'll have to look at that note later. I don't have any reason, I guess, to totally tear it apart at this point, but it's pretty hard to follow at this point. Regardless, there'll be four times as many jobs if Senate File 116 was followed, and that's because of the damage that's been done.
Sir, we're not discussing that one. Okay. We're on 1046, and you have 1 minute left.
Okay. Just in opposition, then, where do you think the dollars are going to be coming from this? They're not all new dollars. They're going to be coming from established charities and businesses within the metropolitan area. I would stand for any questions if anybody has them.
Thank you. We have one testifier left that we know of, and that is Mr. David Sweet. Are you here, sir?
Yes, right here.
Okay. You have a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Senator Perry. I'm David Sweet. I'm the inventor of the iDome, which was featured on CBS News, and I've done six major projects for the state of Minnesota, including the first system for the kids to register at the University of Minnesota. So today I'm here to say, basically, if we want to create jobs, number one, we don't take money from Peter to hire Paul. You know, today we look at Apple Computer, and we want to take and create a new gaming experience that we can, you know, market products to the global market. We got 1 billion people in India. We got 1 billion people in China. And we've worked on a new game show, Watch, Pick, Win, which would allow us to do a jobs and training program for our veterans. And that's our main cause today, is that considering them and the fact that many of these people are impaired. We got 250,000 of them that are impaired with lossing of hearing, and et cetera, and on medication. And we don't want these people to be losing their last paycheck. In fact, my ex-wife gambled the last 12 hours in Las Vegas with no sleep, had to follow me in her car through the mountains, driving, would not leave that machine. And then my roommate in Atlanta worked for the airlines, worked all night long on the online poker gambling, and lost his job at the airlines. So I've seen gambling. And at the end of the day, I think if we're going to do gambling, let's just put an online video showing the shelter they're going to be living in, like the Price is Right show. Because at the end of the day, that's really what I'm looking at. I would like to see, if we do anything like this, let's fund a 100-bed shelter for our veterans, because we need to think of them first. And I put together a petition, which really I'm looking at, you know, funding a new game show where we're actually trying to solve some issues with homelessness from all the different social problems we have, people that gamble with their lives, our veterans, with the banks, and substance abuse and lost on the bet. And the second part is, if we're going to do any gambling, we should have profits that fund the jobs and training game show so we can roll out new technology. Like, I train the staff at the University of Minnesota. We have kids coming out of school right now that at MCAD that are learning technology that's not even marketable. So I want to focus on creating jobs and ask to learn more about our plan and our Watch, Pick, Win game we developed with a global telecom company. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All right, we're at the end of what I have as testifiers. But I want to know, is there anyone else for or against that did not get on the list? I know I'm pushing my time limit here, but that's my prerogative, I guess, as chairman. But I want to give everyone an opportunity. Please come forward, sir, and state your name.
Hi, thank you. I was on the list earlier. My name is Brad Tabke. I'm the mayor of Shakopee, and I apologize for not being here. I was in a meeting with the governor, and it's a big new day for me here at the Capitol, so it's kind of exciting. But I just wanted to make sure that everyone knows what a wonderful corporate citizen Canterbury Park is in Shakopee. They employ 1,000 people in Shakopee, more than 1,000 people, and we need them to stay. And in order for that to happen, we need Racino to pass. It is unfair in the state of Minnesota that we have different rules than other states have, and that it changes the competitive advantages they have. I'm free market. I'm all for people coming and going as business goes, but we have an unfair competitive disadvantage in Shakopee. And so we need to, I'm asking you as senators today to help fix that competitive advantage and get Racino passed and move forward. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much. As well as Shakopee City Council and past city councils have significantly supported Racino through the past, and we recently passed a letter of support, resolution of support for Racino as well. So thank you very much. I appreciate
thank you.
The time.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Yes, sir. Come forward, please.
Okay, my
please
name
state
is
your name.
Richard Walknick, and I'm supporter of Canterbury Park because they are such a wonderful facility, and you can go there, and it's non-smoking. You don't have to put up with all that smoke on the Indian casinos. And I think it's a lot of the fair advantage for the Indian casinos to have places to smoke, puff in your face. Yeah, right, you have the opportunity not to go there. Well, why shouldn't the white man have a facility that is non-smoke and have the same opportunities? And I just don't think it's right. And these people in this state just ought to wake up, because they have it all around us. They have it in Iowa. They have it in Indiana. Why can't they have it in Minnesota? I don't think it's fair.
Thank you, sir.
And that's
thank
my
you
piece.
Very much. Okay. All right, members. Discussion. Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for one of the testifiers or the experts about Canterbury Park. Isn't there gambling out there now 24 hours a day in lots of different ways? And that's what I'd like to hear about is what kind of gambling is out there now, and is it 24 hours a day?
Is there somebody here that can testify there, Mr. Sampson? Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, my name is Randy Sampson. I'm the CEO at Canterbury Park. And Senator Artman, to your question, yes, we do have, as Running Aces has, a card room that is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also have simulcasting going on every day, as well as our live racing in the summer.
Well, and Senator Artman.
Maybe you can't answer this, but that's true at the Indian casinos as well, 24-hour-a-day gambling.
That is correct, Mr. Chair, Madam.
And Mr. Chair, one other point.
Senator Ortman.
The lottery tickets are available 24 hours a day in all of the convenience stores where they sell them.
Mr. Sampson.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to offer the A-12 amendment. I believe we can get that passed out.
Senator Thompson offers the A-12 amendment.
Give them all to him. He only makes one at a time anyway.
Senator Thompson to the A-12 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What this amendment would do is really quite simple. It would just require that before the Minnesota Lottery could implement a contract with a Class A license for the placement of gambling devices, the Racing Commission, et cetera, would be required to do a referendum of the public in the relevant political subdivision in which the proposed gambling facility would be located. So it's simply saying, if it's going to be done, put the question to the public.
Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, a question for Senator Thompson. What would be the political subdivision? Would it be the county, the city, the state? With this particular provision, what would that mean?
Senator Thompson.
Well, Senator Ortman, I guess I would view the political subdivision probably as being an area in which primarily is impacted by the presence of a gambling facility. I don't believe that would be statewide. I think probably the county or something along those lines would be a reasonable boundary.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
A couple things. Just procedurally, at certain times, and this was drafted to the original bill. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
Senator Thompson.
Makes reference to page 11, but I think the amendment that we adopted doesn't have 11 pages. I don't think it makes any difference because it's a totally separate article, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Cohen.
But if the amendment passes, we'd have to have that conform to the amendment itself, to the 765 amendment. But second, Mr. Chairman, certain times, just to follow up on Senator Ortman's question, as to the definition of political subdivision, you talked about the area. So what is the area? I mean, is it the metropolitan area? Would that be the area?
I would say the county, the county in which it's located.
Members, let's just, I know we're trying to answer quickly, but let me recognize you for the record because this is not only on TV now, but it's also being recorded. So, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, if that's the case, then I would ask Senator Thompson to maybe change the language so we know what we're voting on.
Senator Thompson.
All right. Rather than political subdivision, I would ask that the term political subdivision be stricken and incorporate the word county instead.
Okay. I think before we move go down that route, we have to change this. We already have an A-12. Is that correct, Ms. James?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment that the committee adopted is it's called the A-12-0765. And Senator Thompson's amendment is SCS 1046-A-12. So they have different document numbers, but it is a little confusing since they both have an A-12 in them.
What would you suggest, Ms. James?
Let's renumber Senator Thompson's amendment as the A-13.
All right. So, Senator Thompson, to your A-13 amendment.
I would move the A-13 amendment at this point.
Thank you. Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and members, the A-13 is drawn to the bill, and we need to make a couple of changes to draw it to the amendment that was adopted, the A-12. So on the A-13, on line 2, line 1.2, delete 11 and insert 10, and delete 14 and insert 23. And on line 1.3, delete 3 and insert 4. So that those two lines read, page 10, after line 23, insert article 4.
Okay. And then Senator Thompson, Ms. James, wanted to change some verbiage in this.
Yes, on line 10, line 1.10, delete political subdivision and insert county.
Ms. James, by inserting county, to be held in the county. Okay, I see that.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. James, is there a statutory definition of political subdivision? I know he's proposing changing it, but is there a...
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson and members, there is no overarching definition of political subdivisions in the statutes. It has different definitions in different places. There is no definition for it in 349A.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Thompson, a quick question. Suppose this facility is located in a far southwest corner of a county, not near one of the towns part of the county, yet it's close to maybe another city that's in another county, but the proximity is much closer. How would this help? What impact would that have?
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, I suppose that's always potentially an issue anytime you have a vote such as this when you're talking the issue of how certain behavior, certain commerce is going to affect a certain area. If this amendment is adopted, I would certainly be willing to talk in terms of how do you address that if one of the facilities were on the very edge of a county. But it seems to me this would be a reasonable place to start. And if during the process of going through the if there are any additional committees going to the floor, it needed to be looked at to consider that, I'd certainly be willing to do that. But we have to start with something. And it seems to me the county is a reasonable boundary.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sampson, which political subdivisions is Canterbury located in? Are you in the city limits of Shakopee, or are you in another jurisdiction from at that level?
Mr. Sampson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, Canterbury Park is located in the city of Shakopee and in Scott County. And if you'd like, I can also answer on behalf of Running Aces that they are in Columbus Township, which is in Anoka County.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, it's the city of Columbus now. It's no longer a township.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Thompson, is the intent here with this language that if we pass this particular amendment, then you are opening the door for passing this legislation and leaving the entire responsibility of the decision to Scott County to free up kind of our duty to make this decision? This decision is before us, and your proposal puts this decision, if we pass this amendment, in the hands of Scott County's people. Is that the intention of this amendment?
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Torres Ray, I would agree with half of that. I would want to be giving Scott County in that instance input, but that does not absolve us of our responsibility to either pass or not pass this legislation. If we don't pass it out of the legislature and ultimately have it signed by the governor, it never becomes an issue within the county. So it's not throwing the decision on them. It's adding additional layer of decision-making, but we would still have our responsibility as to whether or not to pass the legislation.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a follow-up comment. I think it was clear from all the testimony that we heard that really the people that come, you know, to participate in gambling come from all places, and that the impact goes beyond the area in many, many ways. And I feel very strongly that we have the responsibility to act for the state of Minnesota. And so I think we should oppose this amendment. I think that we have been asked to act and to own that responsibility today. And we need to do this for the public. We need to do this for the state of Minnesota. We need to assume that responsibility today.
Senator Senjum, do you have any comments? A13.
Mr. Chair, I would oppose the amendment. I do that maybe on a couple fronts. We don't know for sure exactly how the polling data would fall, particularly in southwest Minnesota versus Scott County, but just by and large, 70% plus of Minnesota citizens favor Racino, and I would expect that is generally the figure in either one of these subdivisions. You know, it might be 60%. Who knows? I don't know. It might be 80% in terms of just feeling good about the work, for instance, Canterbury done. Our mayor has testified here in terms of the of this corporation and how it does its business and what a great community steward it is. The other thing I would simply offer that in my experience with this bill, I have never ever had anybody from either one of these counties come to my office, call me, email me that I'm aware that has ever expressed concern about living, if you will, next to a Racino. And then lastly, we didn't cover this in the bill summary, but 1% of the money that the Racino itself will get to operate it, 1% of that money will go to the city and the county of each of these jurisdictions to take care of whatever it might be, police protection, emergency management, plan development, or whatever it might be. So it is recognized that these facilities would have an impact of some nature on the city and the county, and money is put towards that effort to help them with, you know, frankly, do that. So for those reasons, and the reason largely because I've never heard any complaints about it, I would suggest opposition to this amendment.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I guess the reason I raise this amendment is if you look at some of the data out there, approximately 9% of total crime is due to gambling and gambling-related problems in counties with Class 3 gambling. That is according to the FBI index. And so to further to Senator Torres-Ray's point, you're correct that this is an issue that should be decided in this legislature, and it would have to be in order for this to move forward. But I feel like the folks who are going to be most directly impacted by some of the social costs associated with gambling should perhaps have a little bit higher level of say in that. So with that, I would move the amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I support this amendment. I think it's a good amendment because the folks in Scott County want Racino. I believe that this will pass. And I think that if it gives some comfort to legislators that are concerned about whether the local community supports this or not, they would want to add this amendment and feel certain then that the local community has considered all of the issues, all of the risks, and all of the benefits and advantages and have come down in favor of supporting this proposal. And so I think this is a good amendment. I'm sorry to say I disagree with Senator Senjum on this point, but I hope members will vote for the A13 amendment.
Further discussion on the A13 amendment.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Senjum.
Would permit the mayor maybe one or two sentences. I said keep it very, very brief.
I'll be very
brief. Please state your name.
Brad Tabke, Mayor of Shakopee. And I just want to let everyone know that with Canterbury Park and with our experiences in Shakopee, we have had very low crime within the city of Shakopee. We have one of the lowest crime rates in our area, and Canterbury Park affects us very little specifically on a crime status. And so we have a very good relationship with Canterbury, and they take care of things really well.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Thompson moves the A13 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Amendment prevails. Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I would like to offer what is now the A14, Senator Thompson. It used to be the A13 until you walked in with your second A12. This is the A14 amendment. And members, I don't want to support an expansion of gambling. But I don't believe this is an expansion of gambling. As Mr. Sampson testified, there's gambling at Canterbury Park now 24 hours a day, as there is at Mystic Lake and the other casinos. I'm concerned about gambling, too, when it becomes addictive, but I don't think that this bill is going to change that one way or the other. If we really don't want any gambling addiction in Minnesota, we should be prohibiting all gambling, and perhaps there are some in this room that would like to see that happen. But I think we've set up an artificial barrier here by saying that that Canterbury Park can't have slot machines. I think that's an artificial barrier, and I would ask members to look at that with a new level of intellectual scrutiny on that to see what are we really against here, because I think if folks want to gamble in Minnesota, there are plenty of opportunities to do it. I want to offer the A14 amendment. After a meeting that I had with the majority leader in the Senate in Georgia, he told me about a program in Georgia that has been recreated in other states. It's called the HOPE program. And what they did is they redirected all of the lottery funds that folks approved. They took all of that money and dedicated it to scholarships, merit-based scholarships for college for all Georgia residents. And I think that would be the best use of this type of fund. What we would do is set up a separate special revenue account. There would be no promises made, but the monies that were actually retrieved by the state of Minnesota from Racino would go into a special revenue account and would be used to fund college scholarships for MinSCU schools, for the University of Minnesota, for our trade schools, including private technical colleges, up to 4 years. It would apply to all Minnesota residents, but that's a standard that's already been defined by the Office of Higher Education. And so in Georgia, what they've done is if you have a 3.0 grade point average or better, you are eligible to receive these scholarships. When I did the math, I looked at a potential of 40,000 Minnesota students that would benefit from a program like this. At the community technical college level, state university, University of Minnesota, private career school, homeschool, and GED students, the eligible pool is 79,000. The eligible pool is likely to be 39,000 or 40,000 students that could benefit. If the fiscal note is correct, and it would generate $120 million a year, if that's correct, then we could provide a scholarship to every Minnesota student who attends one of those colleges or universities in the amount of $3,000 every year. That's what they've done in Georgia. $3,600 every year goes to students that have earned a 3.0 or better academically in high school and then carry it forward into college. The reason I wanted to do this is I think pretty obvious. It's the economic development here. We hear all the time that we need to develop our workforce, that we need to provide more educational opportunities. This kind of opportunity would be big in the state of Minnesota. It would be a game changer for our workforce. It would be a game changer for education. It would be a game changer for our future and for all these kids. It would create the incentive for our students to do well, knowing that the state could be relied upon for a scholarship. It would give them the hope that they need to work hard in school and know that they would have every educational opportunity. This program is working in Georgia, in Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, and South Carolina, and I think it would be a great program for the state of Minnesota. I'm hopeful, members, that we would consider adding this amendment as our statement that that would be the best use of this money. If the money doesn't materialize, then maybe there isn't as much to go around. But if it does, then we've done an absolutely great thing for the future of the state of Minnesota by investing in kids who want to go to college. I've named it the Minnesota Education Retraining and Investment in Talent Act because it would be merit-based. It would also allow for those that have already graduated or have gotten a GED to go back and retrain themselves at some of our schools. I think this is what we need to jumpstart our economy across the state. Members, I hope that you would support this amendment.
Senator Senjum? I'm just going to you first. If you'd rather have the committee discuss first, it's up to you.
No, I've never heard of it.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a profound amendment. It is...
Profound, Senator.
In a way, almost takes your breath away, but certainly saving the horse industry in Minnesota, I viewed, and I came here today looking towards that as Racino's legacy. As you think about a legacy program that this legislature might enact and go forward with this year, using Racino not only save the horse industry, but provide every student in Minnesota with grades that qualify, a college scholarship, is something that each and every one of us can be proud of and should be proud of and will be proud of if we can do this. So I would congratulate Senator Ortman for bringing this idea forward and look forward to the committee to, you know, consideration on it. But I think it's
Mr. Chairman.
It's an absolutely awesome, an awesome idea.
All right. I have three hands up. First one I saw was the red pen, so I'm going to go Gazelka, Cohen, and then blue. Senator Olson.
She has
Senator Gazelka.
Right as in. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Senator Ortman, I would like to know that colleges like St. Thomas or North Central or Northwestern would also qualify under this subdivision 4 on 2.18. Do they qualify in that? And if not, I would like to see that as included in there.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and to Senator Gazelka's point, when Georgia adopted this for the first time in 1993, I think it was when they gave out their first scholarship, they were not able to include private colleges. They added them later because they didn't want to go so far with the program that there weren't a meaningful dollar amount in terms of the scholarship. So it's taken 20 years to develop the program and to bring in the GED students and to bring in those that are alternative students, those that might have lost their scholarship and then been authorized in later legislation to then take advantage of it again and earn their way back into the program. So there have been lots of changes over the 20 years to advance the program. And so I would ask that at this point we accept the amendment as is, but send it to the Education Committee, Higher Education Committee, for further consideration about whether you do that. If you include all of the private colleges, we did the math on that too, and this is unofficial math, but it comes from outside of the state capitol, so a thumbs up on the outside of the state capitol math anyway. But $2,000, so it would take out about $1,000 of what would be available for every student because there would be so many more students. But it shouldn't be a needs-based program, I don't think. I think it should be merit-based, that these kids should be working very hard to get a good grade point average. But I have, for members of the committee, a handout that shows the history of the HOPE scholarships and what they've done in Georgia, and I think it's very interesting reading, and I would ask if we could have someone to pass these out.
They're on their way, Senator Ortman. Senator Cohen, are you done, Senator Ortman, for now? Okay, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, a couple of questions. One to Senator Ortman. How does this work then? And I'm familiar with the HOPE program, but not in the detail you are. How does this program work then if there is less money? What's the diminishment?
Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. Chair, as I said, they've developed this over time. It was a program that expanded over many years. But there is a group of a commission, if you will. It would be in this bill. It's set up as the Office of Higher Education would help us draft the first eligibility requirements, but there is a commission, in Georgia that reviews all of that. And what they do is they look at the corpus of the funds every year, and then they decide how much the scholarship will be. And that's what I would propose here, that we wouldn't be promising any scholarships if we don't actually have the funds, that there would be a time lag here. Once the funds come into the state of Minnesota, there would be an oversight group that would then look at the growth in the fund and decide how much they could actually provide in scholarships. My initial thinking was you would do a 75 or an 80% distribution so you could build the corpus of a fund, and so then you could have even more opportunities based on that. But I think that we would move slowly. I don't want those empty promises that Ms. Meeks spoke so well about. I think we would have to move slowly, but there would be an oversight group.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, my other question then is back to the majority leader, because I couldn't quite tell from Mr. Chairman Senjum, your answer to the chairman's question, because as I understand Senator Ortman's amendment, you began the committee discussion with your discussion relative to payback of the school shift. This eliminates payback of the school shift. And so, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Majority Leader, I take it, is that your position now? We're putting the school shift aside.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, that's correct. I would not oppose this amendment. I think, as I said earlier, it's an awesome idea to think that Racino could help provide an education for upwards to 40,000 students across Minnesota is something that if adopted, I think we could all feel very proud of.
Mr. Senator Cohen.
Chairman Sarah Senjum, I hate to belabor this, but...
Could you, again, they're reminding me to scoot you up there
sorry,
a little bit.
Sorry.
And if yeah, I could probably ask some people behind you just to kick your chair forward every now and then, Senator.
Yeah, once in a while a judge tells me the same thing. Not to kick my chair, but to move up to the mic. Mr. Chairman Sarah Senjum, were you aware of this amendment?
Senator Senjum.
I was earlier, yes, I was. Earlier, before I got here, if that's the question, Senator Cohen, I was here. I was aware of the amendment before I came here today.
Senator Cohen, I believe Senator Senjum found out the same time I did, and that was when we were having a hot dog up in my office, and Senator Ortman brought it to us and said she was going to offer it. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, there's something I'm missing here. I don't think I'm new around the place, but you talk about the need to pay back the school shift, mm-hmm. yet you were aware of an amendment that totally eliminates the school shift repayment. What am I missing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, you're missing that, at least in this case, I think one amendment trumps the other one. And... this is a powerful amendment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I'm not arguing that it's not a significant amendment. I've been aware of the whole program and have looked forward to an opportunity to do something of the same in Minnesota. But I'm a little bit surprised that you would testify to the committee about the need to pay back the school shift, knowing full well that a half hour later you're going to support Senator Ortman's amendment to eliminate the repay back of the school shift.
Senator Cohen, thank you. I'm going to move on. If I was answering for Senator Senjum, I wouldn't be talking about something that hadn't been offered in the first place until I knew it was actually going to be offered, and that would be Senator Ortman's. She at any time, as could any one of us, not offer an amendment at the last minute if we so desire. So I'm going to move on to Senator Olson. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, can I speak to that point just 30 seconds?
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because we are exploring other ways to pay back that school shift. It's just not this topic right today.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was not aware of this, and I had not seen it before. And I realize that people who aren't on the Education Committee have not been a part of some of the discussions that we've been having now in terms of the lapse that we've had in career and tech education. And that's where a lot of the challenges are for this. And I think this amendment, the way it is proposed, is weakly stated in relation to meeting that challenge. And I would suggest that it needs some work, and it could get that work if it were before the Education Committee. And I certainly can bring the amendment there. But it is there are a lot of young people that don't fit the academic mold. They may not meet this requirement, but are very able, very bright, but are turned off by the current system that we have. And we're trying to find ways to crack that, to open those doors and give them a chance to excel, because many of them do. So there's folks that have done some marvelous things in our country and in our world that haven't necessarily had top grades in an academic model of their secondary education and even at the post-secondary level. And when we've got 40% of our kids going on to college and not being able to read and compute, we've got a few other challenges there too. But a lot of the career and tech has gone by the wayside at the secondary level, introducing young people who would learn better in an applied way. And I just don't see that reflected, even though you have words like retraining, and I would assume that might have something to do with the career field. But there are some limitations here that I would like to see, altered. But I do not object to the scholarship idea of the use of those funds.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I, like Senator Cohen, was just a little surprised at the amendment that fundamentally changes a good portion of the reason why Majority Leader Sinjum wanted to do this bill. And so we sit with a $2.1 billion deficit in our K-12 education system, but now we have an amendment that says that we want to not pay that back, but we want to still defund those schools, but if those kids can do well enough in the education environment that's so woefully underfunded and they do well, then we want to put that money in the form of a scholarship. And so I can't quite figure out what's going on here, and I am new to this place here. So unlike Senator Cohen, maybe we'll put it up to being a little naive. It seems to me, and I often hear Senator Ortman talk about being prepared and coming and making sure that you know. Well, we got the notice that this bill was coming, and though we know that, you know, amendments are always appropriate in the House, we sometimes like them 24 hours before, but it appears that that's not the way that we do it around here. But it doesn't really give us or anybody else a chance to really think about what we're trying to do in the short time frame and the really pushed time frame, Senator, Mr. Chair, that you've given us. And so, I can't figure out what we're trying to do here, and I most certainly can't figure out this kind of topsy-turvy world of gaming, which, you know, the numbers go from $50 million or $70 million to $120 million to apply either to a school shift that we're not sure if those dollars are going to come in. It takes a quarter of a century to pay back, or now to fundamentally shift that with the majority leader's okay, because he just learned about it an hour ago, he's having a hot dog with the chair, and then say, well, maybe we should shift that and then put it towards, you know, scholarships. And then with our illustrious chair here for education saying that she even thinks that maybe it could be done a little bit better, I think it kind of shows that this isn't – the amendment's not quite ready, and it appears that the bill's not quite ready for prime time, and that there's a lot more work that needs to be done on even those that support the bill on kind of where the dollars should go and who they should go to and how do we get ourselves out of this pickle of a financial situation that we got. So, Ms. Chair, you know, I would respectfully say that we shouldn't vote for this and that we should really take our time. We got a little time yet. I know some of us are pushing to get out a tad bit early and we want to get out there and talk to our folks, but this is a significant issue, Racino. This is a significant issue, the school shift. And quite frankly, Senator Ortman, as you well know, it's a significant issue, the amount of money that we've defunded from higher education and how we should do that. And I don't think we should do that based on the backs of people who are going to gamble, especially as we hear testimony from folks that talked about how devastating gambling has been to them and their family.
Senator Hagan, with that, I think there needs to be some time for thought. This committee is in recess until 4:30. Well, we'll bring it back.